WBOB.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Joining us now, Ann Coulter, very noted, famous conservative writer, author, commentator on TV, Fox News, all the time, back from the Cornell days where she started the Cornell Review not that long ago because she's still kind of a spring chicken type. She has a new book out, Resistance is Futile, How the Trump-Hating Left Lost Their Collective Mind. And Ann, great to have you with us again.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And great event last night that Breitbart put on. The place was packed. There must have been 300 people there. Great job last evening. You're so gracious. I was able to buy two of your books last evening, so I'm kind of fired up. Thanks for signing them. So let's get to your book.
I hope you started them.
I did last evening, obviously. Now, Anne, why is this book different? Resistance is Futile. Give us some of the headlines here.
Well, there are a lot of them. I don't think our side has really been making the right arguments on a lot of points. They don't have the luxury I do of not having a job and being able to spend months on Nexus and seeing what lying hypocrites the left is and how crazy they've become. But, I mean, just for the Michael Cohen thing, for example, and Manafort, both of whom I write about in the book, briefly, amusingly, don't worry, it's not boring. But, man, campaigns, finance violation, they've spent 2 years and that's all they have? There are a lot of problems with the campaign finance laws, as has been written about endlessly. The crucial point is it has to be proved that, to prove that this was a campaign expense, that this is something that was done exclusively for the campaign, that the candidate would not have spent money on this, but for the fact that he was running for office. So, for example, John Edwards having billionaire donors support his baby mama, Riel Hunter, as he was running for president to hide her and his love child from the public. Even that prosecution was ridiculed and he was immediately acquitted. But is there any possibility that Bunny Mellon is still paying to support Riel Hunter? I don't think so. That was something clearly undertaken for the campaign. In the case of Trump, you know, he's a rich man. He gets a lot of nuisance suits. Obviously, it was Michael Cohen's job to deal with the nuisance suits. How about his settlement of the Trump University case? Why isn't that a donation to his campaign? Because it would have looked really bad while he's campaigning if that lawsuit goes on. Can he settle any case? If he pays, hires a new florist at Mar-a-Lago, because if somebody walks in and the flowers are wilting, who could vote for that kind of person as president? He needs really spiffy-looking Mar-a-Lago. Is that a campaign expense? And, of course, he can spend whatever he wants on his own campaign. But the real crux of the matter is this something that Trump would not have cared? Oh, no, I don't care if Ivanka finds out. I don't care that, you know, my name is all over, you know, my buildings and resorts. I can look like a total sleazeball. That won't hurt my business or my personal life at all. So it's a loser charge, even if true. The end result is, oh, my gosh, he'd have to pay a fine. You know, Obama paid nearly $500,000 in fines for campaign finance violations. We didn't hear any talk of impeachment for that. It's just every single day is Trump's worst day. This is it. The noose is tightening. Ooh, and then you get the little fish and they'll flip and tell you something. Well, yeah, only if there's something to flip on. And again, I think more interestingly than many of the detailed responses, my summary of what's going on with the Russia nonsense, I think, is very clear.
Let's get to that, Ann Coulter. And I think you just nailed this. And I was saying earlier today, the Mueller investigation hasn't showed anybody a shred of evidence, not one crumb, about any wrongdoing by then-candidate Trump. as it directly related to Russian collusion, his campaign. I mean, like you say, all they have after all this time and all this money and unlimited resources is all they've got is a potential campaign finance law violation, maybe already been discredited in the Edwards campaign, as you said, with Riel Hunter in that situation. So my question is, where are they going with this? I mean, they have nothing, unlimited resources, all this time. They have absolutely not a crumb of evidence.
Yes, it ought to terrify people. As I say in the chapter, Robert Mueller is the Russian agent. This, if you're looking for a Soviet import, look no farther than the Office of the Special Counsel. He has unlimited resources, really no oversight to speak of. No one to say, although some judges have already tried to say, wait a second, this has nothing to do with your commission. But the commission that Rod Rosenstein wrote is just, you know, look at the universe, anything you have. He may as well, the letter commissioning a special counsel may as well have said, this Trump guy looks kind of sleazy. Why don't you take a look at him and everyone around him? Because that's what they're doing. And anyone in America, I mean, this is not the rule of law where you wait for a crime to be committed and investigate it. This is investigating specific people. And they're being investigated because they are associated with Trump. I cite in the book, a book you may have heard of or follow. I don't know if it's associated with the book, but there's a Twitter page, Crime a Day. Harvey Silverglade has written a book a while back called Three Felonies a Day. And his argument is that the average law-abiding person mows his lawn, pays his taxes, could be inadvertently committing three felonies a day. There are so many federal felonies, we don't know how many there are. One time the Department of Justice tried to count them up, all up, and gave up in frustration. More are added every year. I list a few in my book. And you know, if you have very talented and very determined left-wing prosecutors with an unlimited checking account looking at you, really, you're going to find something on anyone to go to Manafort. I'm not a tax lawyer. I don't know the details of the case, but I do know it is legal to make money outside of the United States. It's certainly legal and quite common. These campaign consultants, you don't hear about the rest of them. Lanny Davis himself has represented all sorts of dictators. This is what campaign consultants like James Carville and the left, that's what they do to make money. They do the American campaigns for status and to get on TV. And then they go to, you know, Ulo Jobby or something, defend dictators who will come up before the UN a few years later to make lots and lots of money. If you make money outside of the United States, so, you know, half, if it sounds sleazy to you, half of Washington would be in prison if that were a problem. If you make money outside the United States, sir, the law is constantly changing. I do know that. But if you keep it outside of the United States, there are ways you can avoid paying taxes. Who pioneered this? Who is the champion of this? George Soros. And he's worth, oh, about 20 times what Manafort is worth. So if we're really going to go after these offshore banking accounts and tax avoidance schemes, how about Mueller turn to George Soros next? There are a lot bigger culprits. The reason he is zeroed in on, and look, for all I know, Manafort has done something wrong. I'm not saying simply because he worked for Trump that he shouldn't be criminally investigated and prosecuted. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the only reason he is being prosecuted isn't because he hasn't done something lots of other people haven't done. It's because he was associated with Trump.
And Coulter, you are so right. We're with Ann Coulter. She's come out with a new book. This is a must-read for you. It's called Resistance is Futile, How the Trump-Hating Left Lost Their Collective Mind. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at your favorite bookstore. Or you can go to Ann's website, AnnCoulter.com, AnnCoulter.com. And Ann with us for a few minutes here on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Truck and the Truth, live from Washington, D.C. And let me just ask you this question. Somebody asked me this, I think it was Chris Cuomo on CNN last week, and I just want to get your reaction to this question. They said, you know, look, I just got to ask you this. With the economy going so great and all these jobs you keep getting on TV and touting and all these things happening, why is there such hatred for President Trump? Let me ask you that question.
It's really just, well, that's chapter one. It's really, it's not about his policies. The you know, pussy hat wearing resistance couldn't name Trump's policies. It's aesthetic. They find him icky. And to give dignity to their hissy fit, they just can't believe he won the election. To give dignity to their hissy fit, they come up with these demented conspiracy theories about Russia. They claim it's an existential crisis for the country. No, they just find him gauche and embarrassing, and particularly replacing Obama, whom they absolutely loved. It's like having Fred Astaire as your president and then getting Rodney Dangerfield. They're just appalled, disgusted at this, what the gold fixtures is in the White House. I'm not saying I'm wild about the fixtures either, but can we think about the country? No, they really, they've lost their minds over this. It's a closed system. They won't allow anyone on their networks or in their newsrooms to make the alternative argument. And so they just get wilder and wilder in their conspiracy theories, which is why it's a lot of fun to go on Nexus and see how they will change their positions, not only from last year to this year, not only week to week, but day to day. Their position is, their entire political philosophy is, where's Trump on this? Oh, that's awful.
Unbelievable. And two questions. I know we're running a little bit short on time here as we go forward. With these allegations coming out now with Michael Cohen, and of course, six of the eight have nothing to do with candidate Trump, President Trump, Mr. Trump, businessman Trump. They have nothing to do with them, six of the eight, and the other two on the campaign violations, as you pointed out, it's very dubious. So let me just ask you, right now, 76 days out, 75 days out, can the Republicans hold the House?
Yes, I mean, it would have been a lot easier if Trump had kept his promises, built the wall, not talked about giving Dreamers amnesty, really pushed through a renegotiation of NAFTA, pulled the troops home from Afghanistan, all promises, the, I would say, the three pillars of his campaign, instead of just adopting the Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan agenda. But I guess the best shot is for him to go around and give his rally speeches, re-promising the things he promised during the campaign. I think there will be a few cynical voters, but that's a good shot. And, of course, the resistance is helping. The crazier they get, the more people just want to say, vote against the media by voting for the Republican. But brace yourselves, because historically, the party in power loses seats, and if Republicans lose the House of Representatives, that's the end of any hope of enacting any part of Trump's agenda. Really wish he had started with immigration instead of tax cuts, which Jeb exclamation point would have done. And he will certainly be impeached. It doesn't matter. It could be a campaign finance reform. It could be for a hangnail. They will just work themselves into an hysteria. If they have one vote, they'll impeach him. Doesn't mean he'll be removed. Depends if we hold the Senate, and the Senate numbers are quite good, as I'm sure your listeners know.
Yeah, I think we're going to gain seats in the U.S. Senate. I mean, I think we're going to gain five, whether we lose the House or not. The numbers there, and Coulter, very good. We're with Ann Coulter. Only have a couple more minutes. She has a new book out, Must Buy, Must Read. I just bought two of them, signed one for my lovely wife, Ann, of 30 years. Ann with an E, though. Ann with an E is my wife. Resistance is Futile, How the Trump-Hating Left Lost Their Collective Mind. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at your favorite bookstore. Or you can go to Ann's site, AnnCoulter.com. How easy is that? And final question I've got, we'll wrap it up. So, all this money, all these resources, Robert Mueller, unlimited amount of time and money to spend. As of now, my assessment is he has not presented a single piece of evidence that has anything to do with Russian collusion or anything else. When do you see him finalizing this and sending his document to the Hill?
He'll probably be like Lawrence Walsh and do it soon before the election. The history of independent counsels is that they're usually used as battering rams against Republican presidents. The only independent counsel who ever caught a president committing felonies in the Oval Office was, of course, Ken Starr with Bill Clinton. The rest of the time, you'll remember, what was his name? Patrick Fitzgerald comes in from Chicago to investigate who leaked Valerie Plame's name. Well, 30 seconds after being sworn in, he discovered, oh, it's not a crime to leak her name. There was no crime to investigate. But instead of resigning, going back to Chicago, he stuck around, put a lot of people under oath, and then when Scooter Libby's recollection differed from Time Magazine's Matt Cooper's recollection of a conversation, charged Scooter Libby with perjury. That's the typical history. Oh, by the way, he's now the lawyer for James Comey. That's the typical history of independent counsels. They're just battering rams against Republicans. As I point out in the book, a president has full authority to fire any of his any political appointees. He has the authority to tell the FBI or the Department of Justice to devote resources to a new investigation or to drop an investigation. I don't think Trump should do that. I think he's probably doing just as well keeping Mueller out there and keeping his base and his side annoyed at how political and unfair this is.
And final question, in your judgment, should President Trump fire Attorney General Jeff Sessions?
Jeff Sessions is the only member of the administration attempting to keep Trump's promises. So, no. I think we'd be better off if Sessions could fire Trump.
Ann Coulter, thanks for being with us. I really enjoy your perspective. It was great to see you last night. Great turnout. You must have been really excited for that, and you were very gracious to all of us at your book signing event led by Breitbart last evening. Ann, thank you so much. It's always an honor to have you on with us here on the John Fredericks Radio Network. Go to AnnCoulter.com, AnnCoulter.com. Buy her book. I tell you what, you got to buy it. It's going to be a fun read. I read some of it last evening because, you know, I got to get up at 3:30, so I didn't read but the first chapter, but it's a really good piece of work. Ann Coulter, Resistance is Futile, How the Trump-Hating Left Lost Their Collective Mind. You can get it on Amazon, your favorite bookstore, or go to AnnCoulter.com. Ann, thank you so much for being with us. I really always enjoy our conversations, and we'll talk to you again very, very soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Joe Morrissey is joining us now live from Richmond. Joe, a very famous lawyer, as you know, in the Central Virginia area, and it was a time where he won like something like 250 jury trials straight. I forget the number. It's a big number. He also served in the House of Delegates in Richmond, and he ran for mayor in 2016, finishing third there. And full disclosure, number one, Joe's my friend, FOJ, friend of John. Number two, I endorsed Joe for mayor, and although I was ecstatic in 2016 that Trump won, I was very disappointed that Joe didn't. I think he would have been a phenomenal mayor of Richmond. He's a great guy, and he's a Catholic. We got to talk about that, too. Oh, my God, so much to talk about. Joe, great to have you, man.
John, good to be on the show. I hope your summer is going well.
Never better, Joe, here in Washington, D.C., but, I mean, so much to talk about, so little time. Let's first get to the Michael Cohen plea. What does this mean for Trump? How did this go down?
Okay. First of all, let me try to, as I always do, separate the fact from the fiction. What we have going on one side, you've got the Chris Cuomo and Anderson Cooper from CNN, that if you listen to them, impeachment proceedings begin right after the midterm elections. If you looked at Fox News, they used words describing him as on his game, the president, as on his game, unflappable, optimistic man. The truth is somewhere in the middle, and that's what I'm going to try to give you right now, okay?
All right, Joe.
Number one, Manafort pled guilty to 8 counts of tax evasion and bank fraud. 3 points. Number one, it had nothing to do with the special counsel Mueller's investigation of Russian collusion. 0. The trial judge said, I don't even want to hear the name Trump mentioned. Number two, it's not surprising that Manafort was found guilty given the mountain of evidence against him as uttered by the witnesses for the prosecution. The verdict, the only thing surprising would have been if he was acquitted of all the charges. And three, Manafort's guilty verdict does not implicate the president one iota. Nothing connects him to Trump other than you can say the man that led his successful presidential campaign was convicted. So put Manafort to the side, okay? Mm-hmm. Push it to the left. It has nothing. There's no connection, no tenuous connection with the president whatsoever. Now let's turn to Cohen. All right. He pled guilty to multiple counts of tax evasion, nothing to do with the president, and then also breaking election laws. That's the connection to the president. Now, here's what everybody in the media is jumping on board the bandwagon. During his allocution, Michael Cohen, that's when Michael Cohen said to the judge, I did this, this, and this. He made a very gratuitous comment. Quote, I did so at the direction of a candidate for federal office. Just a cheeky way of saying, I did so at the direction of Trump. Okay? Now, that is the only connection to Trump. But let's dig into the weeds. Number one, the U.S. attorney in his charging instrument, in his information, did not even allege that. That's really important. In other words, a comment made by Cohen, to wit, I did so at the direction of the president, wasn't even alleged in the charging information. And number two, where is the backup? Where is the corroboration to Cohen's gratuitous comment, I did so at the president? What does that mean? Alan Dershowitz put it very well. He said it was the case against the president for election laws is very, very, very weak if all you have is Cohen. Let me say this right now. The chance of the president being indicted for election law violations, I put as close to zero as you can be. Mm-hmm. Okay? So a lot of hype boils down to one single gratuitous comment by Cohen that, unless they've got backup, implicates the president almost not at all. Let me pause there for a moment.
Okay, let's just reintro here. So we're with Joe Morrissey, ran for mayor of Richmond, former House of Delegates member, famous lawyer in Richmond, one of the best defense lawyers probably in the history of Virginia, won over 250 consecutive jury trials at one time. Unbelievable record, really knows what he's talking about. So, Joe, let's break this down here on the John Frederick Show. So it's very dubious to connect Trump to the Cohen thing as far as campaign finance violations. So let me ask a couple questions. Number one, is there any illegality? Forget campaigns a second. Is there any illegality to pay somebody if they want to have a story on you, or you think they're going to tarnish your brand or something, and you offer them $150,000 and they say, okay, I'll take the money to shut up? I mean, is there anything illegal with that?
Thank you for that question. Thank you very much, because 9 out of 10 people think that there's something illegal about it. John, there is nothing, absolutely nothing illegal with buying someone's silence. I can't be any clearer than that. If President Trump had spent $130,000, and they've got him on video, here, Stormy Daniels, here, Miss Karen McDougal, Playboy Playmate, here is $150,000 to each of you. I want you to be silent. There is nothing illegal with that. If Cohen says, here is $150,000 to both of you, I want you to be silent, nothing is illegal. If Cohen says, I'm giving you this money to influence the election, nothing illegal. It's called TV commercials. Every time you see a TV commercial and a political campaign, it is money spent to influence an election. It's not illegal. What is illegal is the following: spending money to influence an election and not reporting it. Do you follow me?
Yes.
That's what's illegal. So I hope I have cleared that up. There is no doubt whatsoever that money was paid by Cohen to these women. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, why was it done? Was it to buy her silence? Yes. We still don't have any crime. Okay? The question is, did you buy her silence because you didn't want to embarrass your friend? That's nothing wrong. Didn't want to to embarrass Melania.
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
5300. With SRN News, I'm Ron DeRockstrup. Once powerful Hurricane Lane, now just a tropical storm with winds of 60 miles an hour, last located about 115 miles south-southwest of Honolulu. FEMA Administrator Brock Long says cautions, although Lane is no longer a hurricane, tropical storms themselves could still be very dangerous. Authorities say they've rescued people from more than 20 homes on the Big Island overnight. Ireland's Prime Minister is urging Pope Francis to use his office and influence to ensure clergy sex abuse victims receive justice and truth and healing. Prime Minister Leo Varadkar addressed the Pope today as Francis made his first papal visit to Ireland since 1979. And a Southwest Virginia Sheriff's Office investigating the fatal shooting of an armed man after deputies responded to a 911 call about a disturbed individual in Christiansburg area this morning. This is SRN News.
Download WBOB's mobile app for free from your app store. Powered by Duval County Judicial Candidate Kimberly Sadler.
Good news. You are not stuck with your health care plan. Really. You have a choice, and it's a great one. It's called MediShare, and if you've heard about it and wondered what exactly it is, it's a way that people share their health care bills. And these are people who have a common faith, who want to be part of something beautiful that not only meets their health care needs, but the needs of others too. And it's people who love to save money, big time. MediShare members typically save $500 a month per family on their healthcare costs. That is a life changer for people. So this could be for you. Maybe it's what you've been looking for, a way to pay healthcare bills that's not only very smart financially, but it's even profound. MediShare is a nonprofit with 400,000 members nationwide who pray for and share with each other. So yes, you're not stuck. There's another way, and it could save you a lot. Find out more. Call 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE. 877-64-BIBLE.
Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, president of Conservative Theological University, invites you to expand your biblical knowledge and earn your certified AA through PhD degree with CTU. If you're considering ministry or if you're already serving in ministry, you should consider completing your studies with CTU, located at 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, in the Mandarin community. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE for your interview appointment today.
Tico Sports presents the Spanish broadcast of the Jacksonville Jaguars. All season long, don't miss any of the games of the Jaguars 2018 season on WBOB 101.1 FM and 600 AM. Listen to the broadcast of the Jacksonville Jaguars in Espanol.
This Saturday, the Jaguars will face the Atlanta Falcons with a broadcast starting at 6:45 p.m.
Don't miss all the action brought to you by Tico Sports with the voices of Javier Carrero and Victor Cora.
Hi, everybody. It's your morning show host, Ed Dean, right here on Talk Radio WBOB. The primaries are right around the corner here. Now we're going to the months as currently into July and August. Republican-Democrat debates. We cover it all every day right here on the morning show. We always take your calls at 222-TALK, 222-8255, 6 to 9, Monday through Friday, the morning show. Ed Dean, Roger Henderson on FM 101.1, AM 600, Talk Radio WBOB.
The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
Traffic is slow westbound on I-10. The accident there is slowing things down at the exit for Lenox Avenue. It's less than speed limit in some spots to and from the beaches on Beach, Atlantic, and JTB from the East Beltway to A1A. Mostly cloudy tonight, a 30% chance of rain, low 75. Sunny tomorrow and Monday with a high both days near 92. It's cloudy now and 85 at Talk Radio WBOB.
You're on a special edition of the John Fredericks Radio Network, our podcast. We're live at Corey Lewandowski National Galactic Embassy headquarters here in the Eastern Market part of town. This is where our studio is in Washington, D.C. And Corey is with us now. Corey Lewandowski, as you know, the former campaign manager for the Trump for President campaign. He's also very close to the president, talks to him almost on a every other day basis, and he's an advisor of his informally. Corey also spent a long time in Trump Tower, worked with Michael Cohen during that campaign, and he is sitting down with us now. We're going to be talking about the Cohen plea and what this all means. Corey Lewandowski, thanks for joining us.
Well, it's great to have you in my home here, John, or my office, I guess.
Well, it's office and home, and I'm here every day. Well, sometimes it's great to be here, and thanks for having me. And I should probably restock the refrigerator once in a while, I guess. I'm going to have to think about doing that. I came in today, and I'm like, I forgot to buy all these things to restock you up. But
we'll be okay. All the water you can drink, the best Anacostia water you can drink, John. Don't worry.
I know. You do have great water. Corey, I wanted to sit down with you on this special podcast here for a few moments. The Michael Cohen plea yesterday, Trump's lawyer, friend for a decade, very close to him, seemed to have turned on the president. Also, a parting shot that he gave, saying that he was told by a federal candidate about that he should pay this money to these two women. You've worked with Michael Cohen, obviously, in Trump Tower when you ran the campaign, and Cohen was Trump's lawyer. What do you make of this, Corey?
Well, you know, John, I know Michael Cohen very, very well, and I think your listeners know I grew up in a place called Lowell, Massachusetts. And in Lowell, Massachusetts, in order to survive that blue-collar town, you had to be able to read people. And I could read Michael Cohen within the first 5 minutes of meeting Michael Cohen, and I knew immediately that he was not the type of person we wanted on the campaign. So from the time I walked in the door at Trump Tower and started working for then Mr. Trump to the day I left after we had helped him secure the Republican nomination, I was adamant and steadfast that Michael Cohen had no role in the campaign whatsoever, no formal role, no informal role. As a matter of fact, most of the time that I was at the campaign, Michael Cohen was out doing rogue events, booking himself on television to be, you know, himself designated as a surrogate for the campaign, of which he never was, because he's a person who is very good about talking about things but never executing things. And so what we've learned now with the Michael Cohen plea as of yesterday is once again Michael Cohen has changed his story about what has transpired on these alleged payments to these individuals. It's very important. Michael Cohen has now pled guilty to, I think, 8 different counts. 6 of those counts have absolutely nothing to do with Donald Trump, the Trump campaign, or the Trump organization. They include filing false tax returns. They include lying on bank statements for loans as it relates to his taxi medallion business. What we know is Michael Cohen had $14 million in debt and had to lie on his financial disclosure statements in order to secure more money to stay afloat. So put those 6 things aside that he is now admitted to lying to, which has nothing to do with the Trump organization or candidate Trump or the Trump campaign. The last 2, which are the ones where Michael Cohen has lied now and said that he was directed by candidate Trump to make payments to 2 individuals. When Michael was first asked about this, he said Donald Trump didn't know anything about this. Then he said he paid for it on his own and was never reimbursed. Then he said it was fake news that this was being reported. Then he said that Donald Trump didn't direct him to do it. And now, only after the Southern District of New York has come after Michael for 6 other counts, which is failing to file accurate tax returns, right? He hid $4.1 million from the government, clearly not an upstanding individual. Only now, in order for him to try and accuse Donald Trump of something, do we have to look back at Michael's pattern of lies. I know Michael exceptionally well. I refused to talk on the phone to Michael Cohen for the time I was at the campaign. I refused to sit in his office because people told me he was recording conversations. And you have to look at the totality of what Michael is doing. He's clearly has tax ramifications and violations that he has admitted to. He clearly has bank fraud violations that he admitted to. And now he's trying to make accusations that he was told, which is contrary to his own statements on multiple occasions, that Donald Trump told him to make these payments. You can't believe a word that comes out of Michael's mouth.
The Cohen allegations that have anything to do, and you're right, 6 of the 8 counts that he pleaded out on have nothing to do with Donald J. Trump or the Trump campaign or you or anything else. The 2 of them that stem from potential campaign violations in federal election commission laws, that's very murky also, because even if we had two lawyers on today, Corey, who said that even if the president, Canada Trump at the time, business mogul at the time, paid money for people to be silent just because he didn't want to deal with it, that there isn't anything illegal about that. Well, it's perfectly legal.
There's nothing illegal about that, John. And from, look, I'm not an attorney, to be clear, right up front, okay? But if in the course of business, a business has a transaction, and don't forget, there is a Trump organization, which is a business, and they decide to pay somebody for a service or put a contract in place and have a non-disclosure agreement in the course of standard business, that's perfectly legal to do. If Michael Cohen did this on his own, which is what he said he did, Michael Cohen said that he did this on his own, and now what we're seeing is Michael Cohen created false invoices, fake invoices, to get reimbursed for this after the fact, after Donald Trump was already the sitting president of the United States. The media reports are saying that in February of 2017, Michael Cohen generated false invoices and submitted them to the Trump Organization for payment or reimbursement for the things which Michael Cohen personally paid for. Okay, that has nothing to do with Donald Trump. And if Michael Cohen violated campaign finance laws, as an attorney, he would have known what those laws are. As a person who was a senior member of the Republican National Committee finance team, he would have known what those laws are. As an individual who has raised money in the past for candidates, he would have known what those laws are and knew that he couldn't make those contributions. But he did so at his own accord, not at the direction of anybody else. He paid for it himself, is what he said, not at the direction of anybody else. And so Michael Cohen and Michael Cohen alone is the one who's responsible for those things and for the generation of false invoices to the Trump Organization.
One of the things here that allegedly Cohen did is in getting the reimbursements, even before that, there was only one conversation that was taped, and they talked about this payment. And what did the president say? He said, well, be sure you pay it by check. I mean, doesn't that tell you right there that the president wanted, if this went forward, a complete accounting of the situation?
Well, that's exactly right. And it's my understanding, based on the tapes that we've seen, that obviously Michael has doctored now to cut off certain portions of it, where he said pay by check so that you have a record. There's traditionally, in cases like this, also a contract, a document which says we're going to pay you X amount of dollars. And I think this document has now been public. We're going to compensate, you know, Mary Smith, X amount of dollars in a written document. We're going to give you a check for that. You're going to sign this document that says this is what the parameters of what the money is for. Michael Cohen drew up that document. Michael Cohen signed that document, as did at least one of the participants in this case. I believe the woman who goes by the name of Stormy Daniels actually signed a document saying, I acknowledge receiving this money from Michael Cohen. These are the terms of why I've received it, and I agree to the following terms. Okay, that was all done with Michael Cohen's personal signature on there through a company that Michael Cohen owned. This had nothing to do with the Trump Organization. This had nothing to do with Donald Trump. This was Michael Cohen making a rogue decision, as he has done so many times, that now people are picking up the pieces on, because he has such bad instincts that he thinks he's helping when he's actually hurting.
So none of these documents had Donald J. Trump's signature, right?
They all— That's correct.
Signature. So there is an argument to say that Cohen just went ahead and did this. Let me just ask you something, Corey, straight out. Is Michael—
Oh, he's much worse than a rat. He's a liar, is the problem. And, you know, rats are people who have a conscience, who decide that they want to turn evidence to protect themselves. Well, there's nothing to turn on Donald Trump, is the difference. So Michael is a systemic and historic liar from day one. And what the reason the media has approached the Michael Cohen controversy with some trepidation is because they are so afraid that they are actually on these tapes as well, because Michael recorded every conversation he had with media outlets. And we know that for a fact. He has hundreds of tapes that he has recorded, not with Donald Trump, but other people in the media. So he's a historic liar. You can't keep changing your statements on what transpired. First, there was no payment made. Then Michael said he made the payment on his own. He was not directed by anybody. And the story keeps changing every single time until yesterday, where Michael knows he's facing 4 or 5 years in jail for what he did, not because anyone directed him to. Nobody directed Michael to file a false tax return. Nobody directed Michael to lie on a loan application. Nobody directed Michael to have $14 million in debt and try and work his way out of it. So every single thing that Michael has done has been because of his own mistakes, and he will be held accountable for that. And that's what it comes down to.
Corey, you're saying that Michael Cohen here is an habitual liar, and I see
True.
Where you're going with it. And, you know, based on a lot of the things that have come out, could certainly make a pretty strong argument for that. I guess a lot of people look at this and they say, okay, well, he's got this history of lying. He was taping phone calls. The guy was kind of odd. I've told you the story before. I was only in Trump Tower a handful of times, but I was told immediately not to meet with him. Don't go in his office. He tapes everything. And I was not a regular there, and I was told that by people on your own team. So my question is, why did the president keep him around as his personal lawyer if he had this reputation of being somewhat nefarious?
You know, Michael, I think, was a person for a period of time who enjoyed playing the tough guy role, the self-described fixer, the self-described Ray Donovan is who Michael Cohen thought he was. He thought that he was the person who would fix problems for then Mr. Trump in the private business world. Michael is the person on behalf of the Trump organization when they had a problem with a vendor. He would go and negotiate that problem. When there was and we've seen a number of these now, where a media reporter would contact the Trump organization on a story that was false. Michael would then return those calls and threaten those reporters on many occasions. Many of those stories have been made public in the past. We've seen what he has said, that he's going to, you know, physically harm somebody, assault somebody, whatever it is.
Destroy their career.
This is the standard operating procedure of Michael Cohen. And I believe most of this, not all of it, but the vast majority of this was done without the knowledge or the consent of the Trump organization or Mr. Trump specifically. And I think that's where Michael lived. He lived in a very gray, a very murky world where he would think himself as the fixer. But the bottom line is Michael just created more problems than he ever solved.
So I remember one time, just to buttress what you're saying, I saw him on TV once very early on in the campaign, and I thought he was dreadful. I don't even know where I was. And I texted you. And I said, you know, why is this guy on TV? He's really hurting us. This is very early, Corey, in the campaign. And I guess I can share this text that's innocuous, but you texted me back and said you had nothing to do with it. It was completely on his own, and he didn't represent the campaign, although he said he represented the campaign, which was also a lie.
See, John, that was the problem. Michael Cohen was an individual who never worked for the campaign when I was there. We didn't communicate. We didn't discuss strategy with Michael Cohen. But what Michael wanted to do in order to stay relevant is he would book himself on television appearances. And then he would go.
Not through the campaign.
He would not do it through the campaign. He wouldn't even let the campaign know. And he would go and make those television appearances in the morning, whether it was, you know, CNN, ABC, NBC, Fox News, whatever it was. And he would cause more problems for the campaign because he would talk about things that he candidly didn't know what he was talking about. He would make statements that we had to walk back after. You remember he went on television and said, "You can't rape your wife." One of the most absurd, outrageous things that has ever been said. And Michael Cohen said that. And then he says, "Well, you know, I'm not an official spokesman for the campaign," but he would portray himself as an individual, at least on the periphery, associated with the campaign. And from the time I was there till the time I left, Michael had no formal role in the campaign. He wasn't compensated by the campaign. We didn't want him at the campaign. I did not want him at the campaign. And I did everything I humanly could do to keep him away from the campaign. And then, John, Donald Trump wins. And what does Michael Cohen do? He continues his narrative of deceit and lies, shaking down corporate America by telling those corporations that he is the president's personal attorney, and that he can fix their problems in Washington, D.C. We saw this with AT&T. We saw it with Novartis. We saw it with all these corporations that Michael picked up the phone and shook these people down for millions of dollars. And you know what they found out after the very first meeting? The same thing I found out. Michael was a person who cannot solve problems. He only created problems, who had no value, but they were locked into contracts. And many of those companies now, if not all of them, have regretted ever doing business with Michael Cohen.
And also, he misrepresented the access to the president that he had, right? No question about that, because he told them that he had access to him and he talked to him about these issues. And in reality, he was not really involved in that. So there could be the argument that that exactly wasn't represented up front and on the table. So what happens now with him?
Well, look, what's going to happen now is Michael is going to be sentenced in December. My guess is he's going to go to jail for the crimes that he has committed. He will be fined by the IRS. I think he owes about $1.3 million to the IRS for the tax evasion charges. And he will end up pleading to, and my guess is the Southern District of New York will accept the felonies that he has pled to, and Michael will go to jail for a period of time for violating the law because there is nobody who's above the law. But what's very important here are the crimes that Michael committed, the financial crimes, the false tax returns. That has nothing to do with Donald Trump. The campaign violations which Michael said that he has committed have nothing to do with Donald Trump. Those are things that he will be held responsible for and should be held responsible for, but it comes back to the fact that Donald Trump did not direct Michael Cohen to make a payment, and even if he did make that direction, Michael Cohen, as an officer of the court, as a practicing attorney, should have said, I cannot make that if that's what he was directed to do. If the purpose of that payment was to help impact the outcome of an election or to benefit a campaign, Michael should have said, as an officer of the court, as an attorney, Mr. Trump, I cannot make that payment. But he didn't do that. Michael clearly made that payment on his own without the discretion or the knowledge of the candidate. Michael Cohen signed a contract with Stormy Daniels under his own name through his own corporation that he paid for. Not the Trump Organization, not Donald Trump, that Michael paid for at the time in October because he thought it was the right thing to do, and that's what he's going to be held accountable for.
And that $130,000 he paid himself because it was said that he got a line of credit, so it's not like he got a check for that from the Trump Organization or from Mr. Trump's personal account, because it, when he paid it, he said he had to borrow it.
That's exactly right. So Michael had to go and he borrowed the money from a bank to make that payment at his own discretion. And clearly, the financial institution and the documents that he submitted were falsified. And that is part of the reason why Michael is going to be held accountable.
Corey, let's get to Paul Manafort. This is a day where yesterday Manafort convicted by a jury of his peers on 8 of the 18 counts. Again, did any of this have anything to do with Russian collusion, Donald J. Trump, Corey Lewandowski, campaign manager, or the Trump campaign?
The short answer, John, is no. And what Paul Manafort has now been found guilty of are crimes which he committed 10 to 12 years prior to him coming and volunteering for the Trump campaign for about a 4.5-month window. So what was stood up by the special prosecutor and looked into was supposed to be the direct collusion between the Trump campaign and someone or entities in Russia in order to impact the outcome of the election. That's what Bob Mueller's focus is supposed to be. Was there Russia collusion, cooperation, or coordination between the Trump campaign and some Russians to impact the outcome of the election? And what Paul Manafort was found guilty of is very similar to what Michael Cohen has been found guilty of, which is filing false tax returns. In Paul's case, he also had overseas bank accounts, which he did not disclose. Those are clear violations. They're very easy to articulate that, yes, you had a bank account overseas. No, you didn't disclose it. Yes, you filed a false tax return. Nothing in the Paul Manafort guilty verdicts indicate that he had anything to do, that there was any collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign. Paul Manafort was not even accused of having any type of coordination, collaboration, or contact between the Trump campaign and the Russians that impacted the outcome of the election. What Paul has been found guilty of now is a crime which was committed 10 to 12 years ago based on his overseas consulting work that he made tens of millions of dollars. And look, the judge in the Manafort case was very clear. It is not illegal to be rich. It is not illegal to make a lot of money. What is illegal, and clearly a jury of his peers, six men and six women, agreed with the Mueller investigators, was that Paul did not file properly the taxes which he was required to pay on that money, and that he had overseas bank accounts which he did not disclose to the government. That's what Paul is guilty of. 18 counts. Paul was found guilty on 8 of those counts. The other 10 were a hung jury, meaning they could not come up to a unanimous decision. But ultimately, Paul is guilty of crimes which he committed 10 to 12 years prior to joining the Trump Organization as a volunteer. So, John, think about this. 12 years is a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And if I were to hire someone today and I found out that 12 years ago, they had a speeding violation. They had another violation, which was never disclosed, by the way, which we had no way to check or know. No private company, no private entity could have the access to Paul Manafort's tax records. It's impossible to get, right? Mm-hmm. Clear violation. How would I have ever known that Paul Manafort had been previously under investigation by the FBI? I never would have known that. The FBI never contacted me. They never said that Paul was under investigation prior to him coming to the campaign. Never did anybody contact us and say, we think that he has tax violations. Never, ever, ever. There's no way as a private entity, mm-hmm. the Donald Trump for President campaign, would I ever have that information. And the fact that Paul had violations that predate, you know, not only his tenure with us, but my ever knowing Mr. Trump, and for that matter, you know, 12 years ago, right. not only was Donald Trump not a candidate for office, he was just a private citizen that nobody knew who Paul Manafort was because Paul Manafort hadn't been in Republican Party politics since the invention of the fax machine. So, you know, this is a guy who hasn't exactly been around, and there's no way we would have known, but he's been held accountable, and Paul's going to potentially go to jail now for, you know, 10 or 15 years.
Well, it seems, and again, nothing to do with Russian collusion, nothing to do with the president, nothing to do with the campaign. All right, let's get to Papadopoulos, who lied to the FBI, who's now talking about maybe reversing, I guess, his plea. But I never heard of the guy during the campaign. I never heard you mention him. I think he was on a list because at the time you were looking for just people that supported the president. What did Papadopoulos have to do with anything?
He had nothing to do with anything. Literally, look, I'd be happy to, you know, rethink this. I think I met the guy exactly one time. We had a meeting at the time in the old Trump Hotel prior to it opening. It was a national security meeting. It was chaired by then Senator Jeff Sessions. Who was the head of our foreign policy national security team. Papadopoulos attended that meeting at the request of one of the other staffers. That is the only time I believe I ever had a direct contact face-to-face with George Papadopoulos. I didn't participate in the meeting. I was in and out. That meeting lasted 30 minutes, and he was one of, you know, a dozen to 18 people who were in that meeting. So, you know, again, no, he had nothing to do with the campaign. What I think George Papadopoulos probably did was he's a relatively young guy. He wanted to go out and be a big shot. He wanted to go out and tell people, I'm part of the campaign. I can do this. I know this guy. I can, you know, make my story much bigger than what I really am. Bottom line is he had no influence in the campaign whatsoever. But when the FBI brought him in, if he lied, that's what he will be accountable for. Because you cannot do that unless you're Hillary Clinton, unless you're, you know, Cheryl Mills, unless you're any of the Clinton cabal who has time and time and time again lied to the FBI, unless you're Andrew McCabe who lied under oath to his own organization and has not been prosecuted, if you're a John Q. Citizen and you lied to the FBI, guess what? You're now a convicted felon. And that's what George Papadopoulos has been accused of and has basically found guilty of, is lying to the FBI. And John, you can't do it, but there has to be equity. There has to be an equity on both sides. And what we have seen is this FBI has been more corrupt mm-hmm. than any FBI in the history of our country. Mm-hmm. The top four or five people at that organization have either been fired or demoted or have criminal referrals pending against them. And Andrew McCabe, who was the deputy director, who lied under oath on at least three occasions, according to the own IG report, has still not been charged with a crime. It's very simple. Either you tell the truth and you're not a felon, or you do what George Papadopoulos did, and you lie to the FBI, and you are a felon. And I think if George lied to the FBI,